Edward VII's funeral in May 1910 marked the last gathering of Europe's royalty before the world changed forever. Nine kings rode through London's streets, led by the new King George V, flanked by his cousin Kaiser Wilhelm II. Behind them followed heirs apparent, royal highnesses, and queens in an unprecedented assembly of European power. The Kaiser, astride a gray horse in a British field marshal's uniform, harbored conflicted emotions, nostalgia for his English relations mixed with satisfaction at Edward's death, whom he had venomously called Satan for diplomatically isolating Germany. Among the procession rode Belgium's unassuming King Albert I and the ill-fated Archduke Franz Ferdinand, whose assassination would spark the coming war. Edward's diplomatic achievements had transformed Britain's splendid isolation into new alliances with France and Russia, creating the Triple Entente that would prove crucial in the coming conflict. Meanwhile, Germany under Kaiser Wilhelm pursued aggressive naval expansion that directly challenged British maritime supremacy, ignoring Bismarck's warning to remain content with continental power. The German leadership suffered from a profound psychological complex, a terrible need for recognition on the world stage. When other nations naturally formed defensive alliances in response, Germany's cry of Einkreisung, encirclement, became a self-fulfilling prophecy driving Europe toward catastrophe. Count von Schlieffen, following Clausewitz's belief that the heart of France lies between Brussels and Paris, designed Germany's war plan around violating Belgian neutrality. With France and Russia allied by 1892, Germany faced a two-front war. Schlieffen's solution was to commit 7/8 in German forces against France first, leaving minimal forces to hold Russia, even if it meant temporarily sacrificing East Prussia. The plan hinged on a massive sweep through Belgium, as French border fortifications made direct attack impossible. While a strong German right wing would outflank France through Belgium, a deliberately weak left wing would bait French forces into Alsace-Lorraine. The German military, valuing sword over mind, created a precise timetable. Capture Liège by day 12, Brussels by 19, reach the French frontier by 22, and achieve victory in Paris by day 39. This rigid schedule planned for every contingency except the need for flexibility. The 1871 defeat at Sedan, which included Germany's annexation of Alsace-Lorraine and a crushing indemnity, cast a stationary dark shadow on the French consciousness. Though France initially adopted a defensive fortress strategy along its eastern borders, decades of revenge-seeking led to a dramatic shift in military thinking. The philosophy of Elan Vital convinced France that willpower could overcome Germany's superior numbers. General Ferdinand Foch championed this doctrine of the offensive at the War College. While Foch balanced this belief with tactical pragmatism, his followers embraced only the offensive à l'outrance, attack to the limit. By 1913, the field regulations declared that the French army henceforth admits no law but the offensive. In 1911, General Michel made a final attempt to advocate for defense, accurately predicting Germany would attack through Belgium. His plan was rejected both for its defensive nature and his controversial proposal to combine reserve and active units, an idea the officer corps deemed heretical. Britain's military planning with France began in 1905, after Russia's defeat by Japan destabilized European power. The Kaiser's provocative appearance at Tangier during French vulnerability showed Germany's willingness to challenge France, marking what Charles Peguy called the beginning of a new period. The Escher Triumvirate established the Committee of Imperial Defense and a professional general staff, which planned for potential German invasion through Belgium. Though the conservative government's four-division deployment plan was halted by electoral defeat, Anglo-French military cooperation continued. Henry Wilson and Ferdinand Foch's collaboration deepened this relationship. As director of military operations from 1910, Wilson transformed British strategic planning, maintaining detailed Belgian invasion route maps while noting Britain's military unpreparedness. By 1914, Anglo-French military coordination had become comprehensive, even as Britain's political leadership publicly maintained their no-commitment stance to continental involvement, creating a dangerous disconnect between military preparations and political policy. The Russian military's fearsome reputation rested largely on myth, built around images of fierce Cossack cavalry and seemingly endless masses of hardy peasant soldiers. Their numbers were indeed impressive, 1.4 million in peacetime, potentially expanding to 6.5 million mobilized troops. The French, eager to force Germany into a two-front war, pushed Russia to attack simultaneously with their Plan 17, even before full mobilization. By 1912, Russia had adopted French aggressive doctrine, with General Jelinski making bold promises despite clear logistical limitations. The army's leadership was deeply flawed. Aging generals retained positions mainly for court privileges, while officer appointments stemmed from social connections rather than merit. Foreign observers frequently noted the officers' widespread apathy and incompetence. War Minister Sukumlenov, 1908-14, epitomized these problems, an indolent figure who boasted of his military ignorance. His tenure saw the halt of crucial reforms, weakening of the general staff, and critical neglect of munitions. When war began, Russian artillery had less than half the shell reserves of Western armies. The assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife in Sarajevo by Gavrilo Princip on June 28, 1914, fulfilled Bismarck's warning about Balkan tensions triggering war. Austria-Hungary, seeking to quell internal nationalism, used this as pretext to confront Serbia. Kaiser Wilhelm's blank check of support emboldened Austria-Hungary to issue a harsh 48-hour ultimatum to Serbia. Despite Serbia's near-complete acceptance, Austria declared war on July 28 and attacked Belgrade, prompting Russian mobilization. Once activated, nations' long-developed military mobilization plans proved irreversible without risking strategic disadvantage. While Britain's cabinet hesitated, Churchill positioned the fleet at Scapa Flow. Germany's demand for passage through Belgium and King Albert I's refusal to surrender Belgian sovereignty transformed the regional conflict into a global war. After the Battle of the Frontiers, German forces advanced through Belgium toward Paris, with the British Expeditionary Force positioned between the French 5th and 6th Armies. Sir John French, shaken by German resistance and Lannerzach's retreat, focused on preserving the BEF. Meanwhile, Paris grew quiet as Gallieni prepared the city's defenses. General von Kluck's critical error came when he turned his army inward rather than encircling Paris. When a garrison aviator spotted Kluck's eastward movement toward the Ourcq Valley, Gallieni seized the opportunity to strike the exposed German flank. Joffe had to personally convince the reluctant British command to join the counteroffensive. The Germans' retreat at the Marne cost them their chance for decisive victory. This miracle resulted from their strategic mistakes, divided forces, overextended lines, and the decision to invade through Belgium, which drew Britain into the conflict. The aftermath saw German forces withdraw to the Ain, followed by the race to the Channel ports, Antwerp's fall, and the Battle of Ypres. The result was 4 years of devastating trench warfare. The Marne proved decisive not by ensuring German defeat, but by guaranteeing a prolonged war that would disillusion a generation, as D.H. Lawrence noted, with all the great words canceled out.